And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to talk a little bit about the paranormal and the strange, the road to strange. Michael Brain wrote the book with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and he's got his own out now, also called Travel Tales. We're going to talk with him about that, too. It's an amazing series of stories, very strange stories as well. And welcome back to Coast. Let me tell you about Michael Brain, if I can. Also known as the travel psychologist, he's an author, lecturer, travel storyteller, adventurer, publisher of travel books and guides. Brain is the first to coin the term travel psychology, and as such, through his doctoral studies, work and life experiences, and world travels, he has become the world's first and perhaps the only travel psychologist. Brain ferrets out the heretofore unexplained and untold true psychological netherworlds that lurk just below the surface of many people's travel experiences, bringing them into full transparent view. He is a co-writer with our dear friend Rosemary Ellen Guiley on The Road to Strange, and the subtitles include Travel Tales of the Paranormal and Beyond. The other one is UFOs, Aliens, and High Strangeness. He has written his own book called Travel Tales, Women Alone. That's scary all by itself, Michael. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, George. I'm happy to be here.
You have been so highly spoken of by our dear friend Rosemary Ellen Guiley whenever she's on. We finally had to tell her, who is this guy?
That's great.
And here you. How did you team up with her?
I knew Rosemary over the years. You know, we crossed paths a lot. We're crawling around crop circles together in England. I knew Rosemary from UFO conferences, of which I've gone to from the early 80s up to the present. And so we had a lot of conversations. And one year we had a synchronicity. She got married. She came out to the Pacific Northwest off of near Bainbridge Island and put on her Facebook page that she was going to be in this area. And I hadn't had any contact with her for a while, so Rosemary, I'm here. Let's get together.
Perfect.
And then we met and we talked about a book project together.
She's a great person, great guest. I got to know her, Michael, back in my St. Louis days.
Wow.
I was the Nighthawk, and I was going through the bookstore looking for books for interesting guests for my local St. Louis show. Mm-hmm. And I came across Encyclopedia of Dreams. And I went, this is perfect. I got to get this person on.
She's amazing.
She was just fantastic. People would call with their dream stories, and she would, even though she always qualified it by saying, I'm not interpreting your dream, but I'm going to tell you what I think it could be. She was just more. I mean, our phone lines in St. Louis were just lit up across. So when I carried over to Coast and started doing the syndicated show, I brought her on, and I mean, she became a favorite instantly.
She's great, and we just exchanged ideas, and before not too long, we came up with at least the first two projects with another one in the works.
Super, super. What is it about travel that caught your eye?
I just got bitten by the bug. I was on a career path. I was going to become a clinical psychologist at Temple University.
Mm-hmm.
I started to think, well, I don't know if I really want to spend the rest of my life doing clinical psychology. It could be a little depressing.
Good career.
So, yeah, absolutely. And this is my parents thought, oh, I was just on a great path. And then suddenly I started thinking, well, I love travel. That's my passion. And shouldn't I follow what I really want to do? And I was offered at the time a 4-year fellowship to stay and do the PhD at Temple University in clinical psychology, and I thought, nope, I'm going to Hawaii. And I worked on my PhD exam sitting in a beach chair in the beach parks of Honolulu. And
loved every minute of it.
I did. I concentrated on subjects that had to do with travel. In fact, when I selected the University of Hawaii to apply to, there was a professor that specialized in the visitor industry there. And I thought, why don't I maybe become a mentor, have him as my mentor? And I did work with the Peace Corps at the University of Hawaii, studied some Asian languages over there, And before I knew it, I carved myself a little niche that I called chapel psychology. But it was part of social psychology, really. And I was the one that coined the term. And this was back around 1970.
I mean, a lot of people love to travel. My granddaughter just came back from a two-week stint in Thailand, right, where she just loves to travel. And I was, like, on the edge of my chair every day with her mother, my daughter, going, when is she coming back? When, you know, let's get her back. And then my mother would call me, God love her, she's going to be 89 years old, yelling at me for letting her go to Thailand. I said, Mom, it's not, I can't force her. Yeah, but people love to travel.
And I thought, you know, there's a lot of importance to it. It's not just something we do for fun. It's also almost like a Western walkabout. You know how young Aborigine people in Australia used to venture out on their own?
That's right.
To grow a little bit, mature, grow up a little bit. We do the same thing. I call it a Western walkabout. We send our kids off to adventures, and we know that it's relatively safe, and they're going to come back. They're going to be a little more mature, a little more grown up, a little more fulfilled. And so it's much more important than meets the eye. It's a major activity that we do in our lives. And I wondered, why didn't this become a field of study? There was sports psychology. Why not travel psychology? And that's how I got involved.
Well, we're going to get involved with your latest book, Travel Tales, pretty soon. But let's talk a little bit about the first two that you wrote with Rosemary, Road to Strange, Travel Tales of the Paranormal, and The Road to Strange, UFOs, Aliens, and High Strangeness. Tell me about the titles, Michael.
It's funny you ask that, because once we glommed on that title, The Road to Strange, Rosemary and I could not let go of it. We both decided that has to be part and parcel of any book we produce. And I was just thinking earlier today about, do you remember Whitley Strieber's book with the picture of the alien on the cover?
Yep. Communion. Communion.
So many people got attuned to that picture. And they, you know, it clicked something inside of them. There was something to that that people, maybe they didn't really understand exactly what it meant, but they knew that there was something to that, and they had some kind of connection with that. And the same thing with the title, The Road to Strange. We felt that any travel experience that a person has, they're on a path, maybe seeking enlightenment, like people used to go to India, visit with the gurus.
And the Maharishis.
It was a path. And so we're all on these paths. But when you think about The Road to Strange, that these paths sometimes lead in directions that you don't expect. And so I felt that you have a reaction to that. When you look at The Road to Strange, you think, there's a lot more to maybe the path I'm taking than meets the eye. And I thought it garnered a little bit of a similar kind of reaction to looking at that alien face on Whitley Strieber's book.
Let's talk a little bit about the roads to strange. When people travel, do they come across these weird stories?
They do. And my approach in starting to interview people maybe in the early to mid-70s, I was more akin to Forrest Gump. I just couldn't get enough stories from people. I interviewed people wherever I could get them to sit down. And
did they volunteer, or did you have to go chase them?
I had to chase people, but they volunteered. I had to say, can you please wait? I got to go back and get my tape recorder, and I'll come back. And most of the times they waited. I was lucky that they did, but I was so driven to interview people. Finally, I'm at the point where I can simply use my iPhone and interview somebody on that. But people like to tell you their experiences, and it's not always the case that people want to sit and listen to.
Well, you'll find out when we take phone calls next hour. You're going to get all kinds of stories.
Oh, yeah, and I'll invite people to share their stories. But I always had in mind that if I published someone's experience in a book, that I would contact them at some point and be able to give them a copy of it as a thank you for sharing
nice.
It.
And you and Rosemary need to do a book called Paranormal Truck Driver Stories.
Oh, look. I know. I've heard some
that
of them.
Could be huge.
I have listened to your program for years and years and years. And I sure do recall aspects of people calling in with their experiences.
Oh, my gosh.
We have some experiences that are akin to that. There are people driving, and they tell us what happened to them when they were driving.
Or the things they see on the side of the road.
Absolutely.
I mean, some people see Bigfoot run across the road. Other people see strange hitchhikers.
Exactly.
Very strange. Strange. You remember the Twilight Zone episodes, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, incredible.
I mean, a lot of those you could turn into real life, too.
Oh, yeah, undoubtedly. And the people that I interviewed, Rosemary has a number of stories of her in her collection as well in the books, but the reason we got together in the beginning was that she knew that for years and years I was collecting hundreds and hundreds of stories of all different kinds, and the paranormal was a subset of these stories. I would say about 5% of the interviews that I've conducted over all these years do border on the paranormal, because people, they share their stories with you, and they want to get some understanding of it in the process of sharing it.
Michael, give us a couple of your favorite stories, if you could share them with us, if you would.
I have an incredible personal synchronicity story.
All right.
Okay, let me do that one. It's not too long. When I started out in college, I went to Carnegie Mellon. I was going to be a chemical engineer. And I left after a year, went to Temple University, went through my master's degree, and then I went on to University of Hawaii, like I explained earlier. I used to go to these book fairs, Book Expo America, because I had a travel guide series that I developed, Sightseeing by Public Transportation. And so I would go to the book fair. So I decided this one time I was going to go to New York City, and I stopped in Philadelphia to visit my sister and her family. And I took the train. Oh, I want to just backtrack for a second. When I was on the United flight, I grabbed the Hemisphere magazine, put it in my attaché case, thinking, wouldn't it be nice to maybe write to them and see if they'd like to review my travel guide series, because it was Sightseeing by Public Transportation and so on. So I grabbed that copy of the Hemispheres magazine, got to Philadelphia, visited my sister, got on a train to New York to go to the book fair, and I remember passing the sign on by the train that said Rahway, New Jersey. And I thought, I knew somebody from Rahway, New Jersey. You know how we do that sometimes? We see a sign and somebody pops into your head. And there was this person who was back at Carnegie Mellon some 40 years earlier, who I knew in the fraternity, was a senior. And I just remembered his name. And I went to the book fair, got on the United flight to go back to Oregon, where I was living, Ashland. And I picked up, this time it was now June. That was the end of May. Now this was June on that weekend. I picked up the Hemisphere magazine. So I had two copies of these magazines in my attaché case. Got back to Ashland, Oregon, went to through the front door, looked at the pile of mail on my table, saw a big white envelope that said Hemispheres magazine on it. I opened it up and said, see page 16, or whatever it was, and there it was, a review of my travel guides right in that issue, the ones I picked up on the plane, put in my attaché case. All right, that was the first thing. Then I went upstairs to look at the emails and see if I had any orders for these travel guides. And my God, there was an order from Ashland, Oregon, where I lived. I couldn't believe it. I got orders usually for these guides from Europe, Australia, Mexico, all kinds of places. Never one right around the corner from where I lived. And I looked at the name of this person. My God, it was the name of the person who was from Rahway, New Jersey.
Jeez.
On that sign. When I saw that sign.
Synchronicity.
I called them up. I said, could you conceivably be this Jan Chaikin from Carnegie Mellon? And he said, I would be that Jan Chaikin. And they bought the travel guides from me right in town, Ashland, right around the corner. I never had a synchronicity as complicated as that was. And where does that leave you? I could only conclude that there's some message the universe is giving me. This cannot happen by chance. Not that one.
Yet people see UFOs. They see all kinds of things when they travel.
Yes, they do.
Do they see the same amount if they just stay home?
That's a really good question. The short answer is I'm not really sure of that. But in my personal case, I had a lot of this happen to me when I was traveling, and I've had that throughout my life, but not to the extent.
Maybe you're the magnet for stuff like that.
I think travel opens you to other possibilities, because your mindset when you're traveling is, I'm going to get outside of my bubble. I'm going to expand that envelope. I'm going to experience more things. I'm going to have more excitement and rewards and good things that come from travel. You're open, you're receptive, and therefore you can have these things happen. But there's another reason too, and that's the other end of the spectrum. It's also, you're traveling and sometimes you're not as totally secure as you might like to be.
Well, especially if you're in a different country, for
exactly.
Example.
You have some anxieties. You have little survival kind of worries, even though you have very little really to worry about. But I think that the paranormal also functions, in humanity as a way of surviving and protecting yourself and being safe.
When you travel, Michael, do you find that people in other countries are just as into the unusual and paranormal as we are?
Absolutely, without a doubt. But sometimes the experiences that they have are not what we would normally experience. You go to Papua New Guinea, for example, as this Australian surfer did, and he got involved with a family and kind of adopted by the family, and he was living with them for a couple of years, and he experienced things like telepathy, communication of the family members there with deceased relatives. And, for example, the father experienced his deceased mother coming down the path very, very, very angry that his stepbrother built a structure in an area where she liked to sit while she was alive. And he had said to her, "Don't build that there. Don't you put that there. Mama won't like that." And one day, as this fellow Greg was saying, his father, adopted father, said, "Mama's coming and she's really angry." And of course, Greg didn't see this, but his adopted father saw it. And this structure that was being built by the stepbrother blew down. No windstorm or anything like that, just collapsed. And he was absolutely convinced that his adopted father saw his deceased mother coming down the path and being very angry. So you don't always see or experience the kind of paranormal things that maybe other people do in some of the other cultures. But, oh, yeah, it's everywhere.
Do you find that people who are believers tend to have more paranormal experiences?
That's an excellent question. I think to some extent that's true. From the standpoint that maybe they had something happen to them that was really unusual and accept that and are more open to it. I think the more open you are to these experiences, maybe based on the fact that you may have actually had them, but maybe not totally identified these experiences for yourself, I think that you are more inclined to that possibility. I would say yes.
Michael Breen with us. His website is his name, but he spells his last name Brein, michaelbreen.com. Linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back in a moment, we're going to talk about his new work called Travel Tales, Women Alone. And that could be considered kind of scary too, Michael.
Well, it is. So when we're ready to talk about it, I'll certainly share some of this with you.
All right, we'll do that. And then, of course, in our final hour, we'll take your paranormal questions and stories right here on Coast to Coast AM. And don't forget to email me whenever you want to at george@coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, Michael Breen with us. Of course, we've been talking with him about his books, The Road to Strange, that he wrote with Rosemary Ellen Guiley about strange encounters and paranormal experiences. And his latest work is called Travel Tales, the subtitle Women Alone, The Me Too of Travel. Tell me what got you to write this book, Michael.
Thank you, George. Of the thousands of stories that I've collected, and let's say, 100 to 200 different kinds of categories of how I could group these stories, I started to think what could be, for this first one in this new series, the most important book I could bring out. And I decided, after listening to all these things going on in America today with women, that I realized that I had somewhere between 90 and 100 accounts of women I've interviewed in my travels, stories told to me by others in my travels. I should take these accounts, these 95 to 100 accounts of what has happened to women traveling alone, and try to figure out what helped them, what were the good things that they could do to be safe. And I decided a book on safety and security of women traveling alone was the most important thing that I could do. And I was able to uncover some tips that work, and I could see many things that didn't, because I was delving into the psychology of it. But I remember, George, a week or two ago, you were talking about missing people.
Yes.
And
they just can't find them. They can't find them.
Fascinated me. But let me tell you that I have four or five accounts of women who were kidnapped and disappeared, never to be seen again. And I don't want this to happen to anybody else. So I've taken these accounts and woven them into this book called Travel Tales, Women Alone, The Me Too of Travel.
Are they all scary and tragic, or are there some happy endings here?
Oh, absolutely, there's some happy endings of good decisions that were made, and lots of suggestions of better decisions. But I have one of the funniest ones, and I want to share that with you. I mean, this is just the funniest one I collected. This is a woman who studied martial arts, even went to China to perfect her skills at it. And she was with friends. They were traveling to Alaska, and they decided girls' night out. So they had gone to have dinner and have some drinks and all that. And one of them said, "Let's go to the biker bar just for a drink."
Oh, no.
Exactly. And this woman, we'll call her Maureen, she said, No. We don't want to do that. Let's go home. We've had enough." Maureen's the one with the martial arts. Okay, well, she got talked into it. So they go into this biker bar, and it's rowdy and noisy and tough and everything you can imagine it could be. And they sit at the table, these four women, and they have a couple of drinks. Now, my friend Maureen was maybe had an extra drink that she might not have probably been better off not having. But anyway, at the bar, there's two guys and a woman, and they're loud and rowdy and carrying on. And the girls at the table decide, this, we have to have them stop that. We can't have that. So
it's a biker bar, for crying out.
Well, of course. But, I mean, it was getting out of hand. So Maureen said, "I'll take care of it. Let me deal with this." So Maureen goes up and talks to the woman between the two guys and says, "Come on over, sit with us, and have a drink on us."
Another one, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know how. Just to get her away. So one of these guys decides he put his hand on her butt, and that was the mistake. He should not have done that. She promptly did a little hand grip thing and had him buckle to the floor, pleading to, my hand, let me go, my hand. And then they got out of there as quickly as possible. But she said to him, "Do you promise me you'll never do that to another woman again without their permission?" Yes, I promise, I'll never do it again. And they left. And I said, "Maybe they should name the bar after you." She said, "Oh, no, they're never going to let me back in here again." And the poor guy that was buckled to the floor with his hand bent over like that, well, I don't know if he could ever live it down going back to that.
But, in a situation like that, you could get killed.
Absolutely. So was it the best thing to do? I don't know.
Maybe not the smartest.
No, but they got out. They went home.
Well, do you have any travel tales about hitchhiking?
Oh, absolutely. And, while most hitchhiking is just fine, I found that girls that were hitchhiking just did wrong things. They trusted too easily.
It's dangerous.
Oh, it is dangerous. And it's really not a good thing. Let's face it. And I don't want to be too descriptive.
No, I understand. Please.
Girls got themselves out of situations by thinking of things that they should do. And I have many, many accounts of where they did the right things and some accounts where they didn't, got themselves in trouble.
Now, though the book focuses on women, when guys are traveling alone, do they also run into the same kind of problems?
Well, some of them do, and I actually have a chapter in the back with a few tales of men telling this similar problems that women had. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know people now who would not, Michael, go to Mexico because of the cartel issues and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Are there places that you would just say, don't go there?
Well, I want to just say this. Cabo, for example.
That's one of the places I was talking
absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. And I've had, there's some stories in this book of women that, had the worst things happen to them. And there were stories of how people got out of these dangerous situations. You know, for example, walking down a dark street, even Cabo, it was not advisable what some of these people did. But some people prevailed. Yes, it can be very dangerous. I think.
I wouldn't even recommend you walk down a dark street of the United States.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it, especially so in some areas, and unfortunately, some areas of Mexico are overrepresented in this book as being potentially dangerous.
Now, do you touch on any paranormal stories in the Travel Tales book?
No, it's a totally different thing.
It is.
Except that I think the notion of intuition, I think that borders sometimes on paranormal. Let me just give you just a travel tip number 5.
All right.
Trust your intuitions. Can I do that? It's brief.
Sure.
Always trust your instincts. If it doesn't feel right, the chances are very good that it probably isn't. Better to over-rely upon or over-trust your intuition sometimes and your so-called sixth sense. We are always trying to talk ourselves into rational disbelief of unusual or unlikely situations and are prone to feeling and wanting to convince ourselves this cannot be happening or it can't happen to me and it cannot be happening, so therefore it is not happening. This is too unbelievable, therefore I don't believe it, and so on. It's much easier to talk oneself into being complacent than it is to believe or rationalize or convince yourself that something bad or horrible is unlikely, is either about to happen or is actually happening. Rationalizing, judging, or reasoning away a bad or difficult situation often robs you of invaluable escape time so that it can become too difficult, too late to deal with a bad event in a safe and effective manner.
How
so that's
true.
A travel tip.
How true. Have you had any paranormal experiences yourself when traveling?
I have. And the interesting thing is that when they were happening to me, I knew right away that they were out of the ordinary, unusual, and paranormal. Shall I give you a couple of quick examples?
I'll take it. Yeah.
I was in Barcelona with my VW bus. I parked it out in a suburb because it was so hard to find parking in the downtown of Barcelona. And I figured I'll park it on a main street. It'll be relatively safe. There's people. It won't likely be bothered. So I'm on the train, and I'm on my way out to the suburbs to get back to my van, and I just have this impending anxiety, fear overcoming me. I knew that this was just way beyond normal, and I accepted it as something that I was experiencing, and it was not good. And actually, the train passed by my bus. I didn't get a really good look, but got off the train, walked over to my bus, saw glass in the street, the doors wide open, window broken, and a elderly Spanish couple came up and said, yeah, we've been listening to your alarm on your bus for about 3 hours.
Jeez.
She said there were men that jumped away from your bus, jumped into a car, and drove off. So they didn't take anything. The battery ran down, and I had this intuitive thought, maybe I should put an alarm in that bus, which I had done.
And that's what saved it.
Yes, about a year before.
Yes.
The second similar kind of experience happened to me driving around the Italian Dolomite Alps. Beautiful day, just beautiful, great views from the mountains into the valleys. And again, I had this kind of impending anxiety building up that just didn't seem normal or rational to me, but I paid attention to it. And lo and behold, turning around some kind of bend down the road, I saw these skeletal remains of buildings all washed out, destroyed. A dam had overflowed about a year earlier, killing about 1,900 people and destroying the villages in the valley below the dam. And I had picked up on that prior to getting to a place where I could view it, where I could see it. So I'm absolutely convinced of the paranormal nature of those two experiences.
When you were writing The Road to Strange with Rosemary, how did you accumulate the stories?
Just over the years, I was driven to interview people, George.
And you just saved them, I guess?
I saved them. I recorded them. I had them on tapes. I had them on DVDs. Two of my best friends run the Body, Mind, Spirit Expos. They set me up with booths at some 50 shows. I interviewed between 400 and 500 people just at their shows alone, recording these stories. I recorded something like 1,800 people, probably between 5,000 and 10,000 stories, and I accumulated these, categorized them, put them in databases, and that's why the Women book was the first one in that series. But again, Rosemary and I, the two books that we did on the paranormal and the UFOs, aliens, and high strangeness, did result from my database of these stories. And she and I are working on the next one, and we have a tentative title I'll give to you. The Road to Strange. We want to keep that.
You keep that, yeah.
Alternate realities and time shifts. So Rosemary and I have to discuss it and figure out exactly what we mean by that and what stories in my collection we could use for that and what stories in hers and her husband Joe's collection we could use. So we're working on the third volume, and I'm working on more stories besides the women's book. I have, for example, a collection of 100 pickpocketing kinds of
pickpocketing
stories. Oh yeah, I want to
analyze
how pickpocketing happens, the same sort of thing I've done with the Women Alone book.
By the way, it's got to be a horrible feeling. You're somewhere and your wallet's gone because somebody pickpocketed you.
George, I have heard this 100 times, but worse than that, imagine that you catch the thief. I've had several people say, here's one example, he caught the thief.
But you don't know if the thief is armed or not.
Well, he didn't feel this particular, it was a young guy, he didn't think this guy was armed, but he had him in a headlock.
Okay.
And there's a huge crowd of people around, there's no police anywhere, what's he to do? What do you do?
And they're going to jump the guy, right? As opposed to the perpetrator.
Well, he let the guy go, and the guy ran off. But
did he get his wallet back?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Nothing was stolen. But here's the worst horror story I have ever heard of this nature. This happened years and years ago in Nairobi. A woman, Westerner, was walking along. A local guy grabbed her purse and ran off. Some other Nairobi residents caught the guy, brought him back. And the policeman, again, this is like maybe in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
a long time ago, it wouldn't happen today. But the policeman said to the woman, is this the man? And she said, yes. And the cop dispatched him, killed him on the spot.
Killed him?
Killed him.
Shot him?
Shot him.
Jeez.
And that won't happen now, but it
could happen.
The story I heard is it absolutely true. Well, I can't be absolutely
Did she get her purse back?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah, but that's a true horror story.
That is frightening.
Yeah.
Truly is frightening. Michael, we're going to take a break pretty soon. We're going to take phone calls, and I would hope people could share their own paranormal stories with you and some of their travels and things like that. Where is one of the hottest paranormal areas out there?
I think the United Kingdom.
Really?
Ireland. I've had more people tell me stories of things happening to them in Ireland and also where, you know, the crop circle areas around Stonehenge. So Britain and Ireland seems to be a hotbed for the sorts of stories that Rosemary and I have gathered.
included in here.
Have you had some stories that have truly upset you?
Absolutely. Do I have time for a real quick one?
I've got a minute and a half.
Okay. I'm in my Volkswagen bus. I'm on along the river in Dusseldorf. I have a couple of German friends I'll see in the morning. I'm sleeping at night, and all of a sudden I hear this auditory hallucination of voices, mournful, soulful, sad voices. I knew it wasn't in my head. It wasn't external. It was paranormal. I got up, I jogged along the riverbank, and I passed a cemetery. It was an old Jewish cemetery from the Holocaust era. And I felt that I was communicated to them that night by them. That's my feeling. I never experienced anything like that in my life. Very sad.
That sounds like straight out of a Twilight Zone episode.
It does. And the point is, you know, you're a skeptical person, you know, on the beginning of the hour. All a person needs to do is have a convincing personal paranormal experience, and they're sold.
Up front. That's right.
That's it.
That's right. Simple. It changes them totally.
Absolutely.
From UFO stories to Bigfoot cases to all kinds of things, something's happening to these people.
Absolutely.
Don't you think?
That's the message. That's what it communicates to me.
Yep. I think so, too. You know, some people may have the wrong thing, the wrong idea, the wrong visualization of what's happening, but not all of them. And as I've told our investigators every once in a while, like Linda Moulton Howmichael, all you need is one real crop circle. That's all. We'll be back with your calls next on Coast to Coast AM.